Cycling Podcast presents Life in the Peloton with Mitch Stocker. Hey guys, welcome. This is a really great episode coming up. Swain Tuft, a close friend of mine, were able to hike up into the mountains in Andorra, something I envisioned doing ever since I started the podcast 4 years ago. I thought, Swaino, I'm always out riding with him. He's always telling me these amazing stories. And he was one of the reasons why I sort of started the podcast. I thought, I've got to get this stuff on tape. So finally, after all these years, I found a good time, both a time also when we're both in the right headspace. We hiked up into the mountains, sat back in the grass, and just had a chat. And he told me one of the stories he's told me a few times, and I had the microphone on this time. It's just a great story from a great man. Sit back and enjoy this one. On the 29th of January will be the release of the first official 2020 podcast with Jimmy Whelan. So, guys, until then, enjoy. I've got Swaino over, local man from the country. He's come up to my place and we've hiked up into the high country, found a little spot to perch.
Not used to these high ramparts at all.
We found a nice bit of grass. We're kicking back. It's the day after the Tour de France. Welcome, Swaino, to Life in the Peloton.
Thanks, bud.
Happy to have you on board.
Hell of a place we got here.
Well, let's talk about a little bit about the early part of your career. How did you get into cycling? Because from little parts of the story you've told me along the way, you're from BC, Canada, the mountains. Your dad's a bit of a mountain man. And it sounds like, you know, your family was into a lot of sort of outdoor stuff, water skiing, you know, mountain skiing, climbing, rock climbing, stuff like that. So how did professional bike racing come ever into the scene?
When I think of it, I think it's so weird that I ended up doing this at all. Like, because I was really lucky as a kid. We did awesome stuff. Like, me and my brother had a sweet life. My dad always had us. I mean, he had his ways about doing stuff, but he always had us doing really cool stuff. We were hiking, skiing, stuff that always had you out moving. And I always grew up with that appreciation for nature and wanting to be out. And, you know, like, from my younger years, I was pretty disillusioned with, like, I would just say, like, society in general. Like, I was not really a fan of the usual way of life, you know, like the way the system's set up. You go to school, you just jump through hoops until you find something that you kind of slot into, but you're not sure and you're not super happy. But now you've gone so far into it that you just,
I better just do it now.
Yeah, I just got to do this. And that was never an option for me. I'd rather be a hobo just hanging out, you know, at the beach than, and I know hobo life is not as sweet as that sounds, but it just seemed to me like the way things were set up was just not for, it wasn't a way that I wanted to go. And so I was searching and.
At what age?
So that probably started around 15, 16. I started doing like a lot of backcountry trips, climbing trips. And I used to set up winter camps up in the mountains. And I would go for like a month or two and just stay up there, like way out there, like with these big outfitter tents that you could put a wood stove in.
Just a side note there, because I know this is a whole nother story because I've heard this before, but just to give people an idea of what you actually mean by that, because from what you've told me, it was you could drive to a certain point with these tents, a huge tents.
Yeah.
But then from there, you actually had to hike in for how long?
Well, it'd be like a full proper day, like proper full day, like 6 in the morning, kind of like depart and getting up there at nighttime.
Because they're like sort of big canvas tents.
Massive, yeah, like miners and that use them, like because you build the wooden structure around them. And
so how'd you get all that stuff up there with a day hike?
Well, you would just do your missions. Yeah.
Oh, two times.
No, I would do like probably like 20 trips because you would bring all kinds of supplies in there, right?
20 trips?
Yeah, I mean, that was just what I was doing. That's all I wanted to do. That's what I, you know, I had some really basic jobs. I worked at a butcher and a gas station and a pressure washer. I had three jobs where I could like work really randomly, you know, and then I'd hay bale in the summer. So like you'd go talk to a farmer and in the summer do some hay baling. That would just keep me going enough to like supply myself to do these winter trips and
so you'd build up supplies like canned food and things like that.
Yeah, a lot of dried goods, you know, like oatmeal and rice, and try and seal them off as good as you can. And I learned so many things the really hard way. I mean, if you look at my first setup, it was just a mess of like plastic and balsam fir, like, and a barrel as a stove, you know, and I just smoked myself out. I mean, it was basically just me being stubborn, but that's how I learned a lot of these hard lessons. And I mean, I could go on story. That's a whole other part of my life that I could carry on for hours. But
during that period of sort of like, 15 to 18, you were doing that.
Mm-hmm. And in that, what I really fell in love with was like just going out into the nothingness. And that's one thing beautiful about Canada is that, you know, here we are in Europe, we're sitting up in the Pyrenees, and you know, you go any which way, you're going to run into a village, a trail, a car, a motorbike.
You can hear a motorbike tearing up the mountain now.
Yeah, and we're sitting in this beautiful meadow. But in Canada, like, once you leave the one road that goes through that area, that's it.
Yeah.
You're going into proper wild country. And I think a big part of my youth was, like, I was obsessed with, like, going into those places and just seeing what they were. Not because I thought I was an explorer or that... You know, it was just fascinating to me to go like beyond that mountain and just see what's there. Because, I think a lot of my younger years was spent doing that, you know. That's what brought me to the bike, because I started really getting into climbing, like mountaineering.
Like rock climbing or just like high, hiking?
So for me, it's like, it's a mix. I like the mix stuff. So like... Rock climbing is like you have a face, like, you know, when you take that to the extreme level, it's like you go to Yosemite and you do a wall climb. That's like the epitome of rock climbing, and it's awesome. Like, those guys have ridiculous skills. I was never that good, but I like to scramble, and I've definitely done some decent climbs, you know, but I love mountaineering because it required the whole range of everything. You have the epic bushwhack in. The route to, like, if you're doing a new route, you're having to explore your way and get to where you're trying to get to start the actual climb. And then you're involving so many things where, you know, if the route's never been done, you don't have any prior knowledge, right? So it's like it's totally new. And I had some great friends who I did that a lot with. And we always needed cars because, like, in Canada, we have great distances to, it's like Oz, you know, if you got to get somewhere cool, it's like you need a car. That was just becoming too expensive, and I figured, like, man, if I could just load my equipment, my dog, on a bike and just cruise, you know, like, that would cost me nothing. You know,
because, like, time wasn't an issue for you,
dude. That's the best thing about those times, is that time was
irrelevant. Actually,
I think
only weather probably was the thing. Time.
Yeah, exactly. The changing of the seasons and then the current weather. Yeah. That was all that mattered to you as far as time went. But as far as, like, I remember touring back in those days, if I didn't feel like riding that day, I'd lay down in a meadow like this or by a creek somewhere, read a book. I didn't care. Didn't matter. Whereas now, like, that...
I'm going to be back by Monday.
I got all these things I got to do. And it's like, it's maddening. But anyways... I went down that path to get to the mountains to actually explore and not have this big expenditure of a vehicle, because, like, in Canada, you know, insuring and all this stuff, it gets out of hand. That's what started me on the bike. I just, once I did, like, my first few trips, I also have stories that could go on for ages from that. Again, learning the hard way, because my first bike I bought from, like, a secondhand store, like a Value Village, like the crappiest place you could ever buy a bike from. And it just, everything that could break on a bike broke on that first trip, you know. And it was like a proper trip.
Where was the trip to?
It was up to Bella Coola. which is like heading north in British Columbia. And it was too late in the season, but I was just keen to go.
Just on dirt roads and stuff? Or?
Yeah, so you get on parts of some pretty gnarly roads. But what you also have there is you get on this plateau. It's called the Chilcotin Plateau. And it's like, it's record some of the coldest weather in Canada for some reason. Because it's, and it was like kind of late October. And I hit a patch there where, yeah, I was not well equipped, and it was dropping down to like minus 20 and winds.
Minus 20.
Yeah, and that was a tough spell. But yeah, like I said, you get through that stuff, and you've like rebuilt everything on a bike, and you're pretty much like, if you still like it after that, I was in love. So
where were you going on that trip? Were you purely going on a bike trip?
I wanted to go up into the Chilcotin Mountains
and range. Just. Be up there
and
for
explore
a while.
And go scramble and kind of.
The bike was
scope
purely
it out.
Transport.
It was purely transport. I was seeing it as a tool, not as something that I actually enjoyed, because I hated it for like the first. You know, if you've never ridden and you just think, oh, I'm going to go ride 15 days this way,
that's
and
hell.
Everything's going to be awesome, like minimum 100K. Like you actually had, I had that in my mind, like, well, I have to do over 100K.
A day.
Yeah, because.
On this mountain bike.
It was a shitty road bike. And with a steel trailer that I'd welded up, like heavy, heavy. And then I had a dog that probably weighed like, what would that be in kilos? Like 30, 35 kilo. And all my equipment in
the like a 60 kilo at least.
Yeah.
Trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, I mean, trailers are great.
100K a day.
Trailers are great when you're on the flats and you're moving along. It's fine. But when you're climbing. But we had a good system with my dog. Like as soon as I slowed down to like, creeping pace, he just knew to jump out, and he'd just go timber cruise along the side of the road, chasing grouse and rabbits and shit.
That was a good system.
Yeah, it was great, and he knew, like, even in headwind sections, he would just run. So he would probably run 40-50k a day. Yeah, like no problem. He was. Yeah.
Did you have to tell him that in the beginning? Out.
Well, he wasn't, because like I'd spent so much time teaching him to be in, so he was kind of confused, like when I
don't get out.
Get out. Yeah, I mean, it's all part of being a young man, confused. And yeah, like I said, after that trip, I still loved it, even though I'd gone through all that crazy stuff. I actually lost my wallet, which didn't have really any money to speak of anyways. But I like, that's where I got my first taste of like being like a hobo. And I was like picking up cans for the rest of the trip to get home. And so, you know, like
to get food, money for food.
Yeah.
That's all it was. Cause you need money for anything else. Did you?
No, there was no other expenditure except my sweet bike, which I couldn't buy a part for anyway. So I'd have to jury rig it together just enough to get home. Yeah. I mean, after this trip, I still liked it. And that's where I got the determination to like get a better setup and get a little money together. And then next year, the following season, I want to go to Alaska.
For the bike side of it? Or is there still an element of, I want to go to Alaska. And then once I get there, I want to do a camping trip and then like do some scrambling.
No, that became purely because I was like, biking is sweet. Mm. Like living like this is the way. You have all the stuff that you need, which I look back at that time and I think of how simple that was. Like that was, for me, one of the most beautiful times of my life, because I was truly, like, I think of how I am now, and I love my life. I love, like, all the experiences I've gotten to do, but when I think back to the freedom, the true freedom that I had, that was the time of my life that was...
Run me through what you would have actually had on you then. So how were you sleeping on a day-to-day basis?
Okay, well...
So what would the trailer have in it?
Again, because I went to Alaska twice. The first time was, like, Stubborn McGee, like... I'm going to do it old school like they did back in the day. And I reckon I had pneumonia probably the first couple weeks.
Why? Because of one night? Or?
Well, one, I left too early. So typical, like I just wanted to get the show on the road. So like, you know, Canada's a different beast than it is here in Europe. You know, when you start heading north in April, you still have some wild weather. And I was just going on... Basically, I wanted to make a fire every night. So every time I was cooking, it had to be by fire. And
did you have a? You didn't have a gas stove with you?
No. I wasn't, like, even though I had that stuff. I was like, I'm going old school, like I did back in the day. A woolen blanket and a tarp. So that was like my sleeping setup. And
how would you rig the tarp up between two trees?
So yeah, what I would do is, like, in my mind, like, you only need a tarp if it's really raining hard, because one of the tricks up north is, like, you can sleep under like balsam fir trees and big fir trees, and you essentially stay dry. Like, up north, it's a drier climate, and I would sleep a lot under these trees, and I would build two fires, like, on either side, you know?
Keep you warm.
Yeah, because it would get bloody cold when you just have a wool blanket.
Mm.
And I didn't have I didn't have any tech gear. I just had, like, wool. Honestly, when I look back, I don't know what I was thinking, like, why I would do that to myself. And man, I remember that. I remember one night I thought I was going to die. Like, I really thought, like, oh, this is probably going to be it, because I was sick. I was, like, pneumonia sick, like, where you're coughing and you have those chills, but it's, like, it's also minus 10, minus 5.
And you couldn't warm
up. It's snowing, and I have the fires around me, and you're sweating. You're, like, going into full-on sweats and then chills. And the shakes were, like, so, like... And your body, like, everything, I remember, like, from that night, I still remember, I have the feeling right now when I'm telling you this. I feel it in my bones, because it was felt like the chill was just, like, taking you over. Like, it's so crazy, because I remember thinking,
were you,
like...
just scared then? Dude, did you want to go back home, or were you just like, I'm...
There was no option. If you could see where I was, it would probably be, like, the closest town, 200K. The closest house, maybe... 150.
And you're on that shitty old bike.
You're on a shitty bike so I was on the Cassiar Highway, which is, it's two options to go up to Alaska. You can go the long way, which is Alaska Highway, go see the flats, not so beautiful, or you go Cassiar Highway straight through the Coast Range. But it's hardcore. It's gravel, it's up and down, it's grizzly bear country.
They called it the highway. It's gravel road.
Yeah, yeah, it's a joke. But it's like basically for resources. That's it. It's logging and mining. And
grizzly bear country.
Yeah. In the spring, like, on a nice day, you would see probably on the side of the road on an average day, 20 black bears. And
average.
Yeah. And you might see the odd grizzly, like, when you get up into the higher country, you know? So it's just like, it was proper wild country. So you know, you don't have a choice. It's not like you can just go, like, well, just shut her down and stop the trip, you know? So, yeah, I mean,
Were there towns along the way eventually?
Yeah.
Was it nice getting into a town sometimes?
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's like modern day stuff. Like, now it's nice getting into town because I have money and I can go have a good dinner.
Yeah.
But there I was, like, on such a serious budget. I remember, like, my real treat would be, like, if I get to a gas station and they had, like, a chocolate milk.
Oh, yeah.
That was, like, crack cocaine to me. I would, like, smash one of those on the curb and then continue on. I think of, like, now, like, how you just I go touring now and I have access to everything, you know? Like, it's just ridiculous. And
and it's still hard in its own way, because you're used to the good parts.
Totally. Yeah. But, like, back then I didn't know any better, man. You know what I would eat at night would be, like, I would buy a sack of potatoes on sale. And I would haul that, like,
so heavy,
4 kilos of potatoes. But, like, that's what I'm eating, you know?
What would you do for water? Take a big water with you?
No, that's another thing. Great thing about the North Country is that, like,
streams.
A stream on the side of the Cassiar Highway is more untouched than any stream here, you know? Like,
they're always readily available.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like if there's nothing in 20K, it'd be pretty rare.
Mm.
And it just doesn't dry. It's like, we don't have drought season up there, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just so, it's real, like, rainforest kind of stuff, you know? The reason the trees grow so bloody big.
So this is the beginning of where we are now. And then, so just to fast forward a little bit from that trip, then to say, like, where you were then in 2001, what was that road then that got you from doing the touring trips onto a road bike to start racing?
That's the real, yeah. Because I honestly thought at that time I was just going to tour and kind of be a hobo. Because there was also a period where...
Because you, what? How old were you now? 20.
Yeah, I was getting into 20. Yeah, 20s, 21, and I was still living the life. Like I said, I went to Alaska 2 times, and I was also riding the rails a lot, like freight trains.
Train rails. Yeah. What about your dog?
Yeah, they, like my friends that I go with, they would come, and the dogs would come, and we'd do like proper trips. Where it actually started, we had this really shitty job stacking railway ties, used railway ties, the big wooden things.
Sleepers, yeah.
Sleepers, you call them, yeah.
Yeah.
And we'd be situated way out in the Rockies.
That's a hard job.
Honestly, the worst job I've ever had. But it was like a bonus system, so if like you did a certain amount of work each day, it was only worth it to do the bonus day.
Yeah.
Anyways, where we learned to ride the rails was working at this job, because we'd be situated like way out in the Rockies, middle of nowhere, and you had to get into town, but we had no like
transport.
Yeah.
What were you staying, like a little hut out there?
Little tents. We had our tents, you know. And so we started figuring out the train system. The trains, like so there's like the priority trains go ripping through like full gas. Everything has to pull over for them. They're the ones with like the cooling containers and all that stuff. And then there's like the grain and coal containers. They pull over for everyone. But they're the sweet rides because they have good place to sit, good place to stash your bags, good place to put your dog. And they pull over at all the switch yards. So the next town had a big switch yard. So we always knew we could
get
on at our yard and get off at that yard. And then we started figuring that's it. Like, man, on a day like this when it's, you know, 25 degrees, sunny, there's no better way to travel the world, man. I'm not, like, for me, to this day, I couldn't imagine a better way to see the countryside. Because you don't go on the normal routes.
Yeah.
You go off, you know, you go through different parts of the mountain range and you see totally different stuff and you're not in control. You're left, I mean, there's been times where we've just stopped at a switch yard, man, middle of nowhere, and you don't know what's going to happen. And you camp the night. And no, you realize like when you walk up, the engines have just dropped it off and pissed off.
Oh, shit.
And so you're like, well, these could be here for another 2 weeks.
Yeah, you could be at this random just
so then you got to hike out of there and you don't know where the highway is or, you know, where the next closest thing is. So you just got to walk, you know, and
no phone, Google Maps.
No, nothing. This is back in the day, man. Yeah. I love that. I really do love that about those times. Not having so much access to information so easily. It just made life a little more exciting.
Well, what did you think of that one, Swaino? I think I'm going to have to get him back on the podcast too. Looking forward to the first release of the 2020 podcast, Jimmy Whelan, on the 29th of January. Until then, guys, I'm Mitch Docker. Cheers. You have been listening to Life in the Peloton. The producer of this episode was Will Jones. The music in this episode was composed by Pete Shelley. Thanks, mate.